Okay, I know we should have probably started about 47 seconds ago, but we were listening to John Coltrane, so it seemed like we just had to let it go for a little while, and that's all right. Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable, and welcome to our panel discussion this morning. It is the 24th of October, better known as a Tuesday, and we're thrilled to have you with us on this morning, a blustery day, if you're, I think, in most parts of our region, but it's like a good mid-fall day, I think. So, good morning. Welcome. Glad to have you with us. And I am thrilled that you decided to spend a few moments or maybe longer with us this morning as we discuss what's happening in our world. Let me introduce our panel to you. First, Alan is out. He had a doctor's appointment this morning and is may or may not be back in time. So he may be here. He may not be here. But he's not here now. So I will say that Alan may be with us, but he probably won't be with us. The reason I'm telling you this is because I know we'll get the letters of like, oh, my God, where's Alan? Well, I'm just telling you. So he's got an appointment, and when he's out of the appointment, he'll be here. But that may be after the show. That's all. Let me tell you who is here. And that's exciting, too. Times Union Associate Editor Mike Spain is with us. I missed you, sir. How are you?
I'm well.
Been good. 2 weeks.
That's right. It's you had that fun drive thing going on, and it eked into the 9 o'clock hour on day two, and that's when I'm normally here. So that wasn't going to happen. But it's good to be here.
Good morning, and very nice to have you with us. Empire Reports, J.P. Miller is with us as well. Good morning. How
are
you?
Good morning, Joe. Good morning, Mike. I'm great. I hope you both are doing well, too.
Yeah, we're good. Everything is good. You know, I came to an epiphany this morning may not seem like it, but when I go over the night before and I go through all the stories to decide on some of the things, I always say there's story suggestions. You know, we throw out some story ideas and see what people, you know, what the panel would like to talk about that particular morning. And I spent a fair amount of time looking through and reading articles and things that I think are appropriate and things that we have perhaps not touched on that we should be touching on, or maybe we spent too much time on this and not enough time on that, or not enough time on that and too much on this. And then it dawned on me this morning is that JP is probably doing the exact same thing for your Empire report, because I looked at your list and then I looked at my list and I thought they were the same list, and I'm like, well, why don't you just do it?
I could do it, but I get your email at night, and you always give
me ideas some of my work for
of
me, right?
Stuff that I hadn't looked at always. And I would also say the same thing about the roundtable. You know, I was listening to you a week or two ago talking about the Berkshire Museum controversy, which I had heard nothing about. And since you guys mentioned it on air, it has turned into a huge story, and we've covered it a bunch on Empire Report. So I appreciate the input that you guys have on those type of stories.
Well, thank you. You know, with the Rockwell connection, obviously in New York, and it's interesting. It's a very interesting story. Anyway, we have other cool stuff. The reason I brought this up is the Megyn Kelly story, and I don't know if you want to start there, but Megyn Kelly had just this unbelievable preface to her show yesterday. Where Bill O'Reilly had been over the weekend had said, correct me if I'm wrong here, but I believe the timeline is that there was a published report that there was a settlement for over $30 million.
Right. The New York Times reported that over the weekend. It was on the front page of their print edition on Sunday. And right after that, he settled this $32 million he made this settlement after a sexual harassment allegation. Fox was aware of it when they renewed his contract, his multimillion dollar contract. And that's the objectionable part. They were aware of it, and they pretty much just hired him back.
And it was a personal check from O'Reilly, not the accuser, I believe, got the payment from O'Reilly, not Fox News. Fox News simply found out about it and still renewed his contract for $100 million.
So then Megyn Kelly got on television yesterday and said that Bill O'Reilly said that at no time did anybody ever file any complaint about his behavior to management. And she said, in a very emotional and gripping moment of the show, said, that's not true. I did. And she shared an email that she sent to the heads of the Fox News Network, where she was employed at the time. And
but not much longer after that.
Not much longer after that. And said to one gentleman, Jeff Shine, said, look, you got to do something about this. He calls her up and says, we'll take care of it. And then that night, Bill O'Reilly goes on TV and basically says, you know what? I'm here for my company, and people who speak out against the company are doing a disservice. And they played a clip, Megyn Kelly played a clip of it on her show. And by the way, most of you probably, if not all of you, didn't see this because you were listening to our show instead. Because we're opposite.
That's right, Joe.
That's right. So I'm telling you this simply because I know you're listening to us and not watching Megyn Kelly. But it was all over last night of the right. Very emotional, as I said, preface to the program that she gave. But it does bring up many, many points. She's talking about, you know, not only does this have to stop at Fox News, but this has to stop everywhere. And the point that she kept on making about, you know, that this we're not going to get out of this cycle if the people then just turn around and turn a blind eye to it and allow it to continue for the sake of whatever, to their ego, his ego, or just overall sexism, and it is greatly disturbing. By the way, I apologize to anyone who is a fan, but I will also say that just watching Bill O'Reilly, I don't care what he's talking about, but he just is not a very likable guy. You know, he just seems like an abhorrent human being. Anyway,
I don't think that too many listeners to this program are right now are fans of Bill O'Reilly's. I'm just guessing.
You know what? I preface it because we had him on the show a while ago, many years ago. We had him on the program, and I interviewed him, and it didn't go well because he's very, you know, and people.
It probably went better than the Terry Gross interview.
Yes, but it was similar, and people chided me for, you know, saying that, well, it was obvious I didn't like him. And I said, well, I don't know if it's obviously I don't like him. I just don't know how likable he is. So anyway, not that that gets to the core of this, but it does. It's hard to watch some of the stuff because he's so belligerent and ultimately a bully.
And he continues to be belligerent. What's unbelievable about O'Reilly is he doesn't know when he's losing the battle and that silence would probably be better than him speaking. So last night he came out and he released some letters that Megyn Kelly sent him. One of the letters says, you know, you are a true friend and mentor. You're such a class act. And this evidence that O'Reilly is producing is simply carrying the story another day. And the story is negative on O'Reilly. He has no credibility. He's been fired by Fox News. And he's complaining about these media bullies where, oh, he's automatically guilty just because of the story. And this is coming from the guy who has been the biggest media bully over the last 30 years, doing this to thousands, hundreds and thousands of other people. And if he were right now, you hear silence out of Harvey Weinstein, you should hear silence out of Bill O'Reilly. It would be such a better tactic for him if he just went silent and let Megyn make her statement.
Now, for the record, what was also interesting about the materials that he provided and put on his website were basically thank you cards for baby gifts. There weren't really anything.
And they could have been early on.
Well, they were
early
on.
They had a professional relationship. It wasn't adversarial. He had not yet hit on her. And why wouldn't she do the cordial thing of sending off? These are handwritten notes, you know, the kind of thing that you send off to somebody, and they're polite and appropriate. Emily Post would approve, but I don't think
that's right. But on the bottom of you, don't put and oh, by the way, I know that you're still a molester.
Right, exactly. That hadn't been discovered yet or acknowledged
but
yet.
I think what you're seeing is Bill O'Reilly kind of circling the drain in America's consciousness. I think a year from now.
I don't know about that. that. He has a fan base, and you know, Sean Hannity has him on, Rush Limbaugh has him on, and he's still talking to his audience, and they think that he's been, you know, mistreated, and now he's been victimized, and they're going after him the way they went after everybody else. I mean, there's an element of people that are going to support him.
Yeah, but I mean,
it's not a big element, but that's what that is. That's a sub. Culture, and he can live well in that subculture.
I agree with you, and because the books keep doing well and the personal appearances keep doing well, but to JP's point, which I think is a valid one, when you look that if somebody who has, it's confirmed, has paid out $32 million, and I believe as Gretchen Carlson tweeted out, people don't pay out $32 million if they're not guilty.
Correct. And you see someone like a Glenn Beck. Glenn Beck certainly still has an audience, but he is not, you know, on prime time on Fox News. Bill O'Reilly owned prime time and Fox News, which
was their most profitable news program.
Yeah. And on the most watched cable network in the United States. In prime time, and he has lost that platform. He's going to continue to write books, but I think that as things go along here, he's going to be, I hope and believe that he will be less and less in America's consciousness, and there will be others taking up kind of the, hopefully, the conservative mantle that Bill O'Reilly held for a while.
And Glenn Beck didn't do anything horrible other than his ideology, which was embraced by some and abhorred by others. So
right.
Yeah, I agree, and I think what's going on with Bill O'Reilly and what happened to Harvey Weinstein and some others has a lot of people who have been pigs basically shuddering, as well they should, and that there's women are now emboldened to step forward and reveal who some of these people are, and you know there'll be a cleansing, and they'll probably be people that we had admired up to the point that we find out the truth about them, and so be it.
I also think that for someone like, you know, we've covered a lot of Megyn Kelly's first few weeks on her new TV program, and I think she's struggled to find her voice. And anybody that saw that video of her yesterday, she had her voice on that. And now that Bill O'Reilly has come back on her, I think that people will be watching today to see what she comes back with. And she isn't someone that I would want to get into a media spat with if I were Bill O'Reilly.
Well, Joe, I know you were a big fan of the Megyn Kelly show on NBC.
Well, JP and I have bonded over our amusement of the negative reviews on that program. But I have trouble with it. My trouble is a marketing sense of why you take someone who is very good what she did on Fox News and then try to change her. Why do you spend millions upon millions upon millions of dollars to have a public figure come on to your network and then say all of that stuff that you did that made you a star, change that? That makes no sense to me at all. I don't get that.
I wonder if this, you know, getting to your point, JP, I wonder if this will become a pivot for her to get back into the serious issues and the territory where she has already excelled, and maybe sort of, you know, leave behind this Kathy Lee and Hoda type approach to the entertainment and go more to the hard news. And this might be a good turn for her. I hope she considers getting more serious after this.
I think she will probably try to be somewhere in between the serious statement on O'Reilly yesterday and dancing with Hoda Kotb that she did last week, which was hard to watch for everybody.
Yes.
But it was the setting, the tone of the show at the very beginning of saying, I'm not going to, you know, this is a news-free zone. I don't want to talk about the news. And well, this is what you're good at. This is what you're really, really, really good at. And by the way, there's enough going on that you can have these serious discussions, and especially you are a dynamic, amazingly talented, well-paid woman in broadcasting. Well, can't you use that forum to engage other women to talk about these issues? And that is sort of what has been lost.
Is NBC listening now? They should be to you, Joe.
Well,
I don't think they are, but that's right. The message should be loud and clear that this is what she's good at. Why would you stifle that?
That's right. And that's kind of the point that I...
Yes.
Yeah. It's hard. It's one of those things I don't quite understand. What do you think happens here? I liked your analogy of sort of circling around the drain, but... this story has gone on. Bill O'Reilly seems to be digging in. You wonder at some point, which, by the way, the only thing I was going to maybe not challenge you on, but at least point out that it took Harvey Weinstein a couple weeks to shut up.
Yeah.
At one point, they were talking of suing the New York Times, even.
A couple days. Yeah. I think Harvey realized that he was in deep trouble very quickly, and he... was quiet, and O'Reilly going, he was recorded by the New York Times yesterday complaining about these media people in the media that are saying things about him and complaining about his kids. It's one thing if someone says that who's not Bill O'Reilly. Bill O'Reilly, this is what his program was, the O'Reilly factor. He would bring people on and attack them. He would attack people in the media. He would attack people in politics.
It was the no spin zone, JP.
He would do this constantly. And for him now to be complaining to these New York Times reporters, who cares that I paid out $32 million to this woman? Like, this,
that's my
this
personal
isn't
money.
That
I can do whatever
story.
I want with it.
All right. We're just about out of time for this break. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we will continue this conversation. We'll welcome your letters, and then we'll move on to other subjects. We welcome you. And it's panel at WAMC.org. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion for this Tuesday morning. I very much appreciate you being with us. Let me tell you that we have J.P. Miller here from the Empire Report. We have Mike Spain with us, the associate editor of the Times Union. I want to remind you, if you would like to get in on the letter game, you certainly can. But we do have a couple of minor rules, little things that we like to pass along to you from time to time. So what happens is that people write to us and say, I can't believe you didn't read my letter. I can't believe that you didn't look at it. I can't believe that I've written this and you're not doing anything. Well, here's one thing. You have to make sure you're sending it to the right address, which is panel@wamc.org. Also, we get hundreds of letters, and we probably maybe read 25 to 30 during a show. So the percentage is most likely you're not going to be. It's not going to be read, but we try to get the feeling, the tone, and include those letters. It's as simple as that. Panel@WAMC.org, panel@WAMC.org. Now, I will tell you that I was sitting here, and as I was talking to my colleagues, Mike Spain and J.P. Miller, about the Megyn Kelly story, I had like an inner voice in my head going, well, where's Rosemary Armeo on this? So as we were talking... Because I feel like her voice should be heard of this. As we were talking, I quickly emailed her and I said, Rosemary, right now it's three guys talking about Megyn Kelly. Do you want in? And she said yes and is with us now from Amman, Jordan. Hello, Rosemary.
Hello. Yes, I dropped everything. I do think you need a woman's voice.
Well, absolutely. Now, although I don't know that I think we probably all agree on this issue as to sort of the horrific nature of what we're hearing. But I am interested in your view. Obviously, we've talked a lot about Harvey Weinstein. We started off talking about the Megyn Kelly story because she went on the show and said, hey, look, you say that nobody went to management. I went to management. What do you make of that?
Well, you know, Megyn has put herself in a bad spot because she has been opportunistic about information that she's had in the past. She had stuff about Trump. She didn't talk about it when the election campaign was going on because she was waiting for her book to come out. She wanted people to be driven to her book. She's now in some trouble over the low ratings of her morning show. She was dancing for ratings not long ago. And so now suddenly she's talking about O'Reilly. Why didn't that come a whole lot earlier is my view. I have the same complaint about Angelina Jolie and Gwyneth Paltrow and Mira Sorvino, who had run-ins with Harvey Weinstein and didn't speak out at the time. I understand they were vulnerable and starlets then. But that's not been the case for the past few years. Why did it take until now, until there's this body of other women? And the same with her. I'm glad she did it. You know, I'm glad she spoke out. I want women to band together on this. I think Megyn Kelly could have done a lot more than she has. So I'm happy she did it, but I think it's a little bit too late. He's already out. He's already disgraced, if you will. Although doing very well, that annoys me more than anything. And she wants credit for it after the fact. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does make sense. So what is the but this idea, the compelling part of what she said to me was that she writes the note and she says, look, this guy is trouble. You know he's trouble. There's almost as she's writing it, it's a foregone conclusion. The network has spent millions of dollars defending this guy, and at some point, this has to stop. The guy in charge, Jeff Shine, says to her, "I'll take care of it." And the next day, that night, they pretty much throw her under the bus. I mean, that shows, and she didn't last much longer after that. So I don't know, at what point do you, because there's a difference between speaking out and speaking out publicly, right?
I mean, there also were letters, and O'Reilly was quick to bring them out, in which she wrote to him calling him my friend, my mentor. So what was going on? I mean, she had a public, and has still, a public sounding board. Why could she not have said, I had to write these letters, I knew that it would be held against me, and indeed it was. Her attack is not only too late, Joe, but it isn't the whole story.
Right.
I mean, I think she could tell the whole thing. Why did she write those notes to him?
Well,
feel like she had to?
I felt that, first of all, the notes have been explained as that they were, thank yous for baby gifts and the kinds of things, and they were done before, obviously it can take a year or two or three for a relationship to sour, which seemed to have been the case here. But besides that very weak defense on my part, let me just say that the thing I keyed into what you were saying is the opportunistic issue here, which is, okay, you did it first to sell a book, and now you're doing it because your TV show is, and I don't know if that's the case, but it certainly appears that could be the case.
Yeah, that seems to be the optics of it. I mean, it's amazing, the chef that was in the news today, a celebrity chef, was just let go from his own restaurant because he was attacking women in huge numbers. This seems to be the way women are getting back. They are teaming up and coming out one after another. They're standing up for one another. And boy, that's a really good lesson. And the women who have voice and power because of their ratings, as Megyn Kelly did and as the actresses I named before did, they need to be leaders. We really do need them to do more.
Rosemary, let me ask you this. If at a certain point, you a woman in a high-profile position, like an actress or a TV anchor, et cetera, somebody in the media, is the victim of sexual harassment, and they fear that coming out with it, which I think was a legitimate fear for Gwyneth Paltrow several years ago, et cetera, it would kill their career. Is that legitimate for them to... Is it a legitimate option for them to stay silent so they don't destroy their own career? I think
that's understandable,
yeah.
But it isn't very admirable.
I'm
sorry, I like the firebrands. And when I see injustice in an office, I scream about it. And no, it's not always helped me to improve my career, but you do what's right. I don't think I can say that Megyn Kelly or Gwyneth Paltrow did the right thing. I'm not even sure they say it now.
Hmm. Let's get to some letters and see what you think about these. Matt says, one of O'Reilly's children testified at a custody hearing that he dragged his ex-wife down the stairs by her hair. You're being far too charitable toward this abuser of women. I don't know that we're being charitable. I think many of the harassed women in the Weinstein case had signed non-disclosure agreements. Trump had his previous wife sign such an agreement as part of their divorce, not to comment further on her charge that he had raped her. What do you make of the non-disclosure agreements?
Yeah, the New York Times did a really excellent article about non-disclosures, and I talked to Gloria Allred, who is the celebrity attorney who's handled a lot of these harassment cases. And her position was, my duty is to the client, and I get them the best deal, $32 million to O'Reilly's latest victim that we know of. But what does that do to women overall? That hid, not only did it hide what he did, but that woman had to go and say, this represents no admission of wrongdoing on any sort. I'll never bring it up again. So you hide the problem even more. It's exactly what I just said. It's understandable. Her position is completely defensible as a lawyer, but it certainly is not admirable.
Katie writes an interesting letter. Just a quick side note, not sure who said it now on the air, but nothing happened to Harvey Weinstein. You said something happened to Harvey Weinstein. No, things happened to his victims. Language like this, used, yes, unconsciously, furthers the culture surrounding sexual assault and the blatant disregard for it in our society. Mr. Weinstein is simply reaping what he sowed in the form of repercussions for his disgusting actions. You know, I get the point of the letter, and it's a good point, and it makes you think about how you say it, but I don't know. You know, it's interesting.
Well, finally, something is happening to him. His career is washed up, and he's under investigation by the New York State Attorney General of late, but others also for allegations of rape, and there's no statute of limitations on those. So things will happen to him. But I agree. The letter writer makes the point that these are all the result of his own actions. They're not. He is by no means anybody that is a victim here. He has caused these things.
It is interesting which of the offenders things happened to. Only happened to Harvey Weinstein, justice that is, when he was kind of losing power. He's not the same powerhouse in Hollywood that he used to be. Donald Trump is elected president, and we seem not to. I guess there's a new case pending now, but his accusers seem to have been trapped into the ground. They're not even heard from anymore. Bill Clinton, did he ever really pay? His wife paid the price for his wrongdoing. So who is it who does get punished? Bill O'Reilly's still making a fortune, still getting a lot of money and a lot of airtime. Who really gets punished?
So that brings us to Joanna's letter in Canaan, who says the parallels between O'Reilly and Trump are hard to miss. We can only hope that his time is coming soon as well.
Oh, that would be good.
Let's see. Marty says, JP, the O'Reilly character trait you are referencing is called projection. He calls the media bullies because he is, in fact, the one of the worst bullies. Trump calls the media fake and dishonest because he is one of the worst liars. It's a classic symptom of someone with a narcissist personality disorder. There is something seriously wrong with the GOP because these two are basically worshipped by the right.
I agree with the writer.
Jim writes in and says, who pays the fines? Bill O'Reilly, Fox, or an insurance company? Well, apparently all of the above, right?
That's right.
Fox paid out its fair share. O'Reilly paid out. I don't know about insurance companies, but I do know that that Fox certainly spent a lot of money. In this case, we were saying right before you came on, Rosemary, that when Gretchen Carlson tweeted and said, no one pays out $32 million if they're innocent.
Right. But
yeah.
The repugnant thing about it is that this is sort of like, oh, it's the cost of doing business. You know,
yes.
It has nothing to do with morality or has nothing to do with justice. It has everything to do with profit.
Right. O'Reilly has said that. I did this. I admit no wrongdoing, whatever. I did this to protect my family. Harvey Weinstein said, I'm powerful. Women come after me. What can I do? And we believe it. There's some small part or big part of our population that actually does believe this. I think you saw that with Betsy DeVos's change on rules on rape on campus and her reason for getting rid of regulations that really made it much easier for women to bring charges was that it hurt due process for men. We're still, you know, we still take care better care of the men. And I'm not saying that that's not completely true. As a mother of sons, I actually do see some truth in that. But the balance is off and continues to be off.
All right, we're going to take a break. Rosemary, it's completely up to you, and I understand since I caught you completely off guard, you can stay on, and we're going to talk about the EPA and tax cuts and Niger. And if you want to stay with us, you're more than welcome. And if you actually have to go back to your job that they're paying you for, I understand that as well.
I think I will leave, but please invite me back. I love these little quick appearances.
I will officially invite you back as soon as maybe later this week, and certainly, or if not, certainly next week. Rosemary Armeo, thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you very much. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll talk about other topics, and we welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion for this morning. I'm Mike Spain, J.P. Miller, and we welcome your letters. Panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. Let us move on to some other issues and try to figure out what else is happening in the world. So, the tax cut plan. Cutting taxes is hard. Trump is making it harder, is the headline in the New York Times. The president said on Monday that he would oppose any effort to reduce the amount of pre-tax income that American workers can save in 401k retirement accounts, effectively killing an idea that Republicans were mulling as a way to help pay for a $1.5 trillion tax cut. The directive, issued via Twitter, underscored a growing fear among Republicans and business lobbyists that Mr. Trump's bully pulpit whims could undermine the party's best chance to pass the most sweeping rewrite of the tax code in decades. So if I am reading this correctly, basically what those in the Republican Party are afraid of is that the president can often be a loose cannon. Could that possibly be what they're saying? They can't trust him on this?
Yeah, he's thrown a lot of water on their effort to get a tax bill through before the end of this year, which they very much want to do. One of the problems is that many, like the head of the House or the Senate committee, Corker, has said that he doesn't want to go into debt providing a tax break and tax relief for Americans. He wants it to be basically revenue neutral. And one of the ways they were going to pay for it is they were going to severely limit how much people can put away out of their income in 401ks without having to pay taxes on it now. The way a 401k works, of course, is you pay the taxes when you're in a lower tax bracket after you retire. And if you have to pay up front, a lot of people won't save that money. This is an incentive. So they were going to make them now you can put $18,000 a year away. They were going to make it something like $2,400 a year, and that would mean people would be paying a lot more taxes. The middle class would be paying a lot more taxes.
So can we look at this and say, well, good for the president for speaking out and talking about something that is going to, quote unquote, screw the average American?
Well, Trump does have, I think, a good ear as to hearing something that's a totally horrible idea and saying, okay, forget about that idea. But I want to go back a little bit to the fact that Trump was elected back in November, and he was focused on repealing Obamacare. He was focused on stifling illegal immigration, and he's failed on those two things. And now the Republican Congress comes back last week. They pass a $4 trillion budget. This is one of the largest budgets in history. This budget that they pass, $4 trillion that the federal government's going to spend, is going to provide a $660 billion deficit in 2017. So these Republicans that come in and say, we're the fiscal conservatives, trust us, they're going to raise spending and cut taxes. And every time they do this, they're going to lose at the polls. The Democrats are going to say, do you guys want more tax cuts for the wealthy? Elect the Republicans. So the fact that they are fighting this battle and focusing on tax cuts, I think, is horrible for their electoral chances in 2018.
You know, to change the subject just for a moment, I remember one of my favorite things in growing up was watching The Tonight Show. And every once in a while, you'd be watching The Tonight Show, and in would come Bob Hope. And would just, like, sit down and do a thing. And that's what today's show feels like. We had Rosemary come in, do a little pop-up. Now, I said at the beginning of the show we didn't know if Alan was going to make it because he had a doctor's appointment. And here you are. This is great. You arrived.
I'd rather have root canal, which is exactly where I was.
Ooh.
Every tooth. Well, this particular tooth has three roots that go to it. Two of them they got. One of them I have to go back for.
Oh, man.
Is this more information than you need?
No, I tell you, though.
It's torture.
It's horrible. I had that once when I was very young. And in the process of getting the other root, because it broke off, dislocated a nerve. And it was like the most painful thing I'd ever gone through.
Well, that is not the case here because I have a genius of a doctor in Troy named Siegel.
Yeah, my dentist was an idiot.
This guy's a genius.
I think I can say all this because he's long dead, but go ahead.
Couldn't have been,
can't libel a dead man.
No.
Couldn't have been better. Couldn't have been kinder. Couldn't have been more gentle. He's the right guy. And, you know, I'll go back in and I'll see him again.
Okay. But you're okay now? You're here? You're ready? You're okay.
Yeah.
You're like Bob Hope.
So what do you make?
So I'm
thanks
about
for the memories.
I'm thinking about what JP said just now. I always come back to that 40%. In other words, do those people, no matter what happens, blame somebody else or something else? I have one guy I talk to all the time who's, I think, a Trumpian. I can't swear to it, but is always saying it's the Congress's fault. It's not Trump's fault. And I don't know what Trump is up to. So that when he says, for example, as he did yesterday, well, you know, this business about, your pensions and putting the money in, I'm not going to allow that to happen. Meantime, the House of Representatives seems to be ready to allow that to happen. Today, they're all meeting, and there's going to be, well, hell to pay as they go back and forth, including several senators who hate this guy's guts at this stage of the game.
But we were just saying just before you walked in, but you could also say, well, isn't now Trump speaking for the little guy, for the average American who—
It's a populist position.
Right. Like, I don't want that limited and pay more taxes on what I put into my, well, we don't have 401ks, but 403bs for non-profits. So, you know, is that, that's a popular message, but then if it upends, so I guess my question is that strategic? Or is that just not knowing that's going to screw it up as much as it does?
Right, Mike?
It is impulsive, but it's also playing to the populist. It's like after he praised the House for essentially adopting their own alternative to Obamacare, he came out and said it was mean. Yeah. I mean, he pulls the rug out from under them, makes it impossible for them to draw a consensus, and makes them the enemy of the popular people that elected Trump president.
Exactly right.
So we're going to take a break here in just a second, but when you look at the where this goes from here, and this meeting will take place, does anything come out of it? Do they talk the president out of that response, or does it?
The key word here, Joe, is Steve Bannon, because on the one hand, you know, he may be a populist, Mike and JP, but on the in this case, but on the other hand, he is threatening every one of those guys is going to be up for election, if they're up for election, with finding an opponent for them, a Bannonistic, you know, right-wing opponent, some populist.
And I also think that even if they give him these tax cuts, which I can't believe he's really even excited about, this is meat and potatoes, Republican, exactly what Bush did in 2001. But there is certainly no guarantee that if they do vote for his tax bill that he won't still primary them anyway. No Republican senator trusts or likes Trump, in my opinion.
You're exactly right, except for the fact that I think Trump needs a victory so badly that any kind of victory, including a tax cut, becomes important to him.
Do you think maybe it Trump views it's maybe better that he not get a victory because it's good to be the blamer and not the person that actually gets something done and has to defend something bad like a tax cut for the wealthy?
Well, you know my respect for you, Mike, but absolutely not. I think he really wants a victory.
Okay.
He needs a victory, I think, and he's willing to compromise anything, perhaps even his stance on the 401k. Maybe there's a compromise in there, you know, instead of $2,400, it'll be $10,000 instead of $18,000 that it is now.
All right, let's take a news break. Ray Graff is waiting patiently, and there's no one who waits more patiently than Ray Graff. So let's take a break. We'll be. I didn't mean that as a shot. I honestly didn't mean it as a shot. You're very patient. You're there. You're ready to go. Now you can hear the dulcet tones of Ray Graff right after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Very nice to have you with us. Alan Chartok is here, Mike Spain, J.P. Miller, and we welcome your letters, panel@wamc.org. I don't want to not mention the big story that is breaking as we've been on the air, and that is that Bob Corker has gone off again and saying that that the president has basically proven himself not to be a truthful person. The feud between President Trump and Senator Corker rekindled after the Tennessee Republican said the White House should stay out of talks on tax legislation. The president lashed out on Twitter, drawing a rebuke from Corker, who said he would not support Trump again. The conflict highlights one of the challenges the GOP faces as it tries to move its failed health care effort. So Bob Corker was interviewed, I guess, by both Good Morning America and CNN, but said, I would, just like him, to leave it to the professionals for a while and see if we can do something that's constructive. If you start taking things off the table before you get started, you make it very difficult. Trump returned fire by insulting Corker on Twitter, saying the retiring senator couldn't get elected dog catcher in Tennessee. Isn't it sad that lightweight Senator Bob Corker, who couldn't get reelected in the great state of Tennessee, will now fight a tax cut, tax cuts plus, the president tweeted. The difficult relationship between the two adds another layer of uncertainty. So this is a lot of what we were talking about. I do want to get also, I would like to get the quote.
Can I interject on Corker really quick? And that's that Corker is unique in the United States Senate in that he is one of the most respected Republicans in the United States Senate. He is not a career politician. He was a very successful businessman in Tennessee, and he's now not running anymore. And people in the media and around D.C. Kind of see Corker as speaking for them, speaking for real pragmatic Republicans, and his criticism of Trump is a lot worse than, say, the criticism from, in my opinion, John McCain, who is thought of as more of, although he's a hero, is thought of as more of a someone who likes to get his name mentioned in the media. Corker's doing this and is a highly, highly respected U.S. senator.
So with that said, Manu Raju of CNN is interviewing Bob Corker. This is after the tweet comes out, maybe about less than an hour ago, about 40 minutes ago. And Corker asked if he should have backed Trump's presidential campaign, said he would not do that again. And he said because the president has great difficulty with the truth. Raju asked him, you wouldn't support him again? No, no way. I think many of us, me included, have tried to, you know, intervene. And I have had private dinner and have been with him on multiple occasions to try and create some kind of aspirational approach, if you will, to the way that he conducts himself. I don't think that's possible. He's obviously not going to rise to the occasion as president of the United States. How damning is that?
Well, it's pretty damning. And what's important, JP, and I think you're on track here, is that there are a number of Republicans who are going to follow Corker. It may not be the majority, but you don't need a majority. You may need 5%, which is considered to be a landslide in American electoral politics. 5% of those Republicans coming over to the other side or sitting on their hands, and the Democrats win. So therefore, Corker's, you know, I keep thinking about this. It may be true that Corker could not have won. That if he was giving Trump a hard time, it may be true that Bannon and Corker, Bannon and Trump would have gotten him. Doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. because what it shows is what a bully he is. I was thinking about this, Joe, this morning as the First Lady was shown on the television giving lectures on bullying. She's married to the biggest bully in the world.
The bully in chief, as some call
it. It's unbelievable. No, but I have great admiration for Corker. I don't know that I agree with you about McCain. I think he's a terrific hero to so many people.
So when you look at this situation with Corker, I mean, this is the second round of this, and nobody spoke out really the first time. So I wouldn't. Would we expect any other Republicans to speak out?
Well, he said
Jeff Flake might speak out, or
well, he said he was clear, right, Mike?
Right, and Sass has said, you know, almost as much, with not as harshly as Corker has said it, but numerous news reports have said that other Republicans in the Senate have privately said, "I agree with Corker."
And but by the way, Corker said that too.
Yeah,
Corker said they all agree with him.
Yeah, but they need to step forward if they want to make a change.
What are they going to do? I mean, are they going to risk their offices and get a primary?
No. Yeah, they won't risk their offices. They're politicians.
Yeah. which, depending on how you're counting, is either the first oldest or the second oldest profession.
Right.
All right. Let's go to some letters. You have a stack in front of you there, sir.
All right. There we go. Dear panel, I'm surprised at Rosemary for criticizing actresses for not speaking out earlier. Women have been threatened and demonized when they've spoken out. It's not easy to stand up to people in powerful positions when they are abusing you. Maybe they didn't speak up because it's normally more trouble for the woman. Megyn Kelly is a different story. Withholding information so you can make money on a book is disgusting.
Now, I don't want to, Rosemary is not here, but in earlier conversations with her, the point that she has made is that these particular women, Angelina Jolie, Gwyneth Paltrow, and others, have been at a very, at the highest levels of their profession many, many years ago, and if they wanted to say something then, they certainly could have. That was one of the points that she was making. So I'll throw that out just as for some context.
Well.
I think your mic is off, sir.
That's
there
because my hand is on the
okay,
on the
good.
Off button.
There you
oh,
go.
Sorry. Mike says, Weinstein. What I find almost appalling is Weinstein's behavior is all the Hollywood actors acting like they didn't know. Hollywood's rape culture is well known, and women and men have been abused along with many children. Money was more important to them than exposing the truth. And Modesto says, conscience or career, I'm so sorry. In the military, Hollywood media, I don't think the only environment where one has to be a whistleblower. Many today are choosing between conscience or career, football players kneeling, young women getting married once raped, teachers fear repercussions with community. If a certain favorite student has behavioral issues, it's everywhere. How many times you hear after the fact from someone, I should have done something. We need louder, brighter signs, and that's Modesto. And from Barbara, it's a sexual harassment segment. While I respect that Joe made such an effort to provide a female voice, in other words, Rosemary, on the news around Megyn Kelly, I have to commend the three men on the panel who so strongly voiced their disgust at Bill O'Reilly and commented sincerely on the talents of Kelly without a female in the room. I have to say, I'm amazed at how this segment was brought up. Such deep emotions as an older woman. I guess I have set aside my own sense of indignation, knowing that women historically have been shushed and shunted off to the sidelines when they tried to bring attention or even criminal behavior of more powerful men. And that's from Barbara.
Excellent. Thank you very much for your letters. We welcome yours. Panel at WAMC.org. Paul Ryan is having a press conference right now saying that the Trump-Corker feud will not affect tax reform. So
no, you don't think so?
No.
Well, they always say things like that. They say Trump care will pass. Obamacare will be revised, but it doesn't. So in other words, I think the idea is to say optimistically that something that they want to happen is going to happen, but it just doesn't.
But even Bob Corker today said that this is a congressional initiative. This is not the president's initiative, and he doesn't get to tell us what's going to be in it and what's not going to be in it. And I thought that was pretty bold. And I kind of figure that's what Ryan is trying to say today.
And what they've been talking about for months and years is broad-based tax reform, where they reform the way that Americans are taxed, and that all has kind of gone by the wayside. They see that deductions are really popular, so they're not going to take those away. And so this is, in my opinion, going to end up being a very simple, old-school Bush tax cut from 2001, in which is not popular with the electorate. When you go to the voters and the Democrats say, you guys cut taxes for the very wealthy, it's going to be a tough time in 2018 if this is all they pass.
All right, let's move on to some other orders of business and some other topics in our last 10 minutes. And we go to the issue of the EPA. So the great anger erupting over the EPA's apparent muzzling of scientists. Let us do our job, they are saying. The Trump administration's decision to prevent government scientists from presenting climate change-related research at a conference in Rhode Island on Monday gave the event a suddenly high profile, with protesters outside, media inside, and angry lawmakers and academics criticizing the move. This type of political interference or scientific censorship, whatever you want to call it, is ill-advised and does a real disservice to the American public and public health, according to Senator Jack Reed, a Democrat from Rhode Island. He is Rhode Island's senior senator. He had an opening news conference for the State of Narragansett Bay and its watershed event in Providence. We can debate the issues, we can have different viewpoints, but we should not all be able, but we should all be able to objectively examine the data and look at the evidence.
I think Senator Reid says it well, that this is a political interference with science. It's not allowing scientists to do their job. It's suppressing scientific research. It's not the first time the Trump administration has been accused of that. And this is an event that calls that out one more time. But it's been happening since Trump took office. It's a denial. It's a denial of what scientists have come to agree on.
Well, you know, to me, this is the worst thing that Trump has done, because Trump has put the whole world at risk because of his stupidity. You know, we're talking about our children, we're talking about our grandchildren, we're talking about undeniable stuff. We're talking about the water temperature being raised. We're talking about Polynesian islands, which are going to disappear, as well as places like New York City, where Gore predicted quite correctly, right, you know, before Sandy, what was going to happen. And it happened. You know, as I've said 1,000 times, it's one thing to hold up for a kid to hold up a grocery store and spend a good deal of their life in jail as a result of this. But here's a guy who is threatening the world and nothing happens.
Yeah, I heard today that, you know, only three countries had not approved the Paris Accord after the U.S. pulled out. It was Syria and Nicaragua. Well, today Nicaragua has signed on to the Paris Accord. So now there's just two countries, the United States and Syria, that will not go along with it.
The non-binding Paris Accords?
Yes.
What I think about the EPA is these are really poor tactics on the Trump administration's part. If they don't want the EPA to make noise, let these scientists speak. It's not going to make any news.
This wouldn't have been in the news. You're exactly right. But this is speaking to the base. This is telling his base, see, we don't, you know, it's rallying the base.
I don't think Trump's base is anti-climate change. I think that they're really a bunch of people that are focused on anti-immigration. And this EPA, this focus on the EPA and muzzling scientists, it's making large news stories out of something that shouldn't be a large news story. If these EPA scientists went and spoke in Narragansett, Rhode Island, one would even know. There'd be a couple of local news stories. No one would care. This has now turned into a national news story in the Washington Post, and it's a very easy arrow for the Democratic Party to use against Trump, that he's a science denier, he's a climate denier, and why are they fighting this battle?
Anybody? No? Okay, good. Let's move on to. it was very good. You shut everybody up, JB. That was good.
No, I don't mean to do that though.
We did have one letter from a guy who said that if I had taken care of my teeth while I was a kid, I wouldn't be needing this kind of rectification right now. There's always
that
one.
Seems unfair, doesn't
That's
it?
A scientific opinion.
Yeah, you used to go big on Halloween, Alan? Did you go big on Halloween with the candy?
No, I did not. No, I did not. I've never been a sugar guy, really.
The key is flossing. You can't floss too much.
The key is flossing. All right, let's move on.
Water picking.
That's right. That's another way of doing it. All right, let's go to other topics. Alan brought this up earlier, and I would like to get back to it, which is Steve Bannon vowing his war on his own party. There's this article that I was looking at and referencing in regards to from the New York Times about making this parallel between what FDR did and what Steve Bannon is doing in this war on the party. By the summer of 1938, President FDR had enough and his own party controlled both houses of Congress, yet the latest elements of his New Deal were stalled. Exasperated by fellow Democrats standing in the way, Roosevelt resolved to push some of them out of office. Nearly 80 years later, President Trump's former chief strategist, Stephen Bannon, has declared a season of war to push out problematic Republicans in midterm elections, just as Roosevelt tried to do to troublesome Democrats. But Roosevelt's purge backfired. Not only did he fail to take out his targets, but he also emboldened them, all but dooming his domestic program for much of the rest of his presidency.
Yeah, dooming it like Social Security. I thought this was a lousy article, to be perfectly honest with you. Really lousy. Even though they interviewed many of the people we've had on WAMC.
How do
like
you
Susan
really
Dunn.
Feel?
Yeah. It was a lousy article. It was Roosevelt, who was worshipped almost as a god in this country for the kinds of things that people have done. It was a forced comparison. They ought to be ashamed of themselves for putting that up.
Well, you know, Roosevelt was more successful in the first 4 or 5 years of his with his domestic program. And then he did hit problems with the Supreme Court. He tried to pack the court. That didn't work.
Well, it did work because they got off and he got his programs through.
Right. But he was pretty much, just treading water until the war came along. And he did get reelected two more times after 1938, you should point out. Yeah. So he was very, very popular and his programs prevailed. And we have Social Security today. Absolutely. But he had he really ticked off a lot of people.
Well, I don't know who let that turkey through in the New York Times, but I can tell you one thing. It's not Thanksgiving yet.
Okay, so if it's forced, fine. But in the minute and a half that we have left, there still is the Steve Bannon question of trying to change and will it backfire? Will it work?
And that should have been the article.
You know, all right. I'm making that our article.
Yeah, I think it's possible that the Bannon tactic will actually work. What you typically see in the midterm of the first presidential election is a lot of excitement on the opposing side and very little excitement on the incumbent side. And what Bannon is doing could potentially artificially create some excitement on the Republican side for getting some new blood in there. The Congress is even less popular than President Trump. And so I think it could possibly work.
I want to respectfully disagree with you, as usual, JP. And that's because I think what happens is that Bannon is going to get all these right-wingers nominated for office, and then what's if he succeeds? And what happens as a result of that is that he is that the Democrats gain the middle.
Right, but the two important things there. Bannon has a lot of money behind him, and that really makes a difference in elections. And the other is the Democrats don't seem to have their act together.
Well, that's true.
All right. We are out of time. My thanks to Alan Chartok, to Mike Spain, JP Miller, Rosemary Armeo, and for you for writing. We'll have another panel discussion tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock. In the meantime, the roundtable continues after the short break.